You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Hey, very pleasant. Good afternoon, and welcome to another important week. Wow, what a weekend it was. A lot of great stories, a lot of really sad ones, and we will talk about all of that this afternoon. Let's get right to it, and we start with the story of the weekend, and it was the University of Alabama going to Knoxville, winning the game, but losing its best player. Why does this happen again? Best player maybe in the league, best player in college football, 2 years in a row, injury against Tennessee. Waddle is gone for the year. What does it mean to the Crimson Tide? Well, they still have great receivers and a great running back. Smith, Mechie, Harris is running back, Forrestall. I mean, they are covered there. But Waddle was the difference maker. Special teams. He could do everything. He could change everything. And now Alabama has to deal without him.
You know, you can't replace a guy like Jalen Waddle in terms of what his ability is. And it's no different than, you know, losing Allen Iverson if you're, you know, guy scores 30, 40 points a game. He's, you know, that kind of impact player. But we can do the things that he can do well, and he doesn't need to be anybody but himself. And we don't put expectations on him. We just want him to be the best player that he can be relative to what he can do. And how can we get some of our other players at the receiver position to step up and also do some things that they're capable of doing that would help us be able to continue to have success with the receivers that we have and the passing game that we've had so far and the balance that we try to create with that passing game on offense.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the field Saturday, Tennessee lost not only a game, but its momentum and a lot more. It has problems, and we're talking serious, serious problems. This game has just been a bust for them the last couple of years. But look at the offense. First three games, it was on fire, 33 points a game. Now it's 15 yards. Big difference. Three and out difference. Turnovers, the biggest difference. Zero the first three games. Eight since then. And we'll talk a little bit more about Jeremy Pruitt's comments after the game where he said, I was on the other sideline 3 years ago. And I see a big difference. Well, the final score, he was, of course, at Alabama. The final score has not shown much in that regard, and we will dig into that pretty deeply this afternoon. Other stories to discuss with you. Coach O, his team looking good. No QB controversy, but LSU football now has two very serviceable quarterbacks. And suddenly LSU has life. Season looked over. Well, with a game at Auburn this weekend, there's a sense that maybe the Tigers have finally got the magic back. Let's talk about the schedule the rest of the way for the LSU Tigers. And before we do that, let's listen to what Coach had to say.
What you saw today is what we've been seeing all camp. I had total confidence in TJ. I had total confidence in Coach Insminger to call the right game. It was a great mix. Proud of TJ.
How would you best describe his performance?
Outstanding.
When Miles comes back, do you have a situation?
Miles is our starting quarterback. He's played very well in the first three games. But, you know, TJ showed some stuff tonight. It may be a competition. We'll see.
Maybe a competition. This is what the Tigers have left at Auburn. FPI likes him in that game, by the way. Then Alabama, Arkansas, at A&M, Ole Miss in Florida. It is not an easy schedule, to say the least, but at least there is life now for the LSU Tigers. And a couple weeks ago after the Missouri game, that it looked like it was all over. This weekend is such a critical game. Auburn, we'll talk about Auburn as well. They won again. A lot of controversy about that, but that seems to be following the Auburn Tigers around. Kentucky a week ago had new life. Maybe not anymore. Missouri. What about it, Coach Drink? The Tigers dominate the Cats down the stretch and win 20-10. What a win for Missouri. Injuries at Ole Miss. Jalen Jones out for the season, upper body injury. Ole Miss losing again. Wondering about what might have been. And the team that beat Ole Miss, Auburn, with a big game against LSU, loses Brandon Council, who not only was the right guard, but he could literally do everything, and that will be a significant loss. This afternoon, we'll talk about all of that. We'll start in Knoxville, Tennessee, with Blake Toppelmeyer about what happened, and has there been as much progress for Jeremy Pruitt as maybe Philip Fulmer thought? John Talty, AL.com, on the loss of Waddle, the hopes of the Tide the rest of the way. Hunter Yurecek, did he make the best hire in college football or in the offseason? And Glenn West from LSU Country on the quarterback situation on the Bayou. Let's get to your phone calls as well at 855-242-7285. A new week has begun, week six of the SEC season. And let's start with Ed in Georgia. Ed, thanks, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Paul, just a couple of questions about the Ole Miss-Auburn game. Can you do anything, influence these people that choose the people to watch the replays? Don't put those people back in a booth ever again. They don't deserve it. That's all I got to say, Paul. Have a good day. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that was a. You know, I was watching that game as a lot of you were, and somewhat of a state of bewilderment about the end of that one. Why that play was not looked at a little more closely. Drew is up next from Ohio, and you're on the air. Hey, Drew.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. It's a first-time caller, so I'm looking forward to just sharing some thoughts.
Thank you.
A quick question for you. I'm an Auburn fan. I actually grew up in Hartsville, Alabama. But as an Auburn fan, I'm honestly a little frustrated. I get probably a lot of Auburn fans are frustrated, but I get that the last few wins have been controversial. But, Paul, could you set the record straight and just, you know, we've always been controversial, 2010, 2013. But, Paul, I understand that we win a lot of close games. But if we don't have a good team, we're not going to be in those games, and we shouldn't be 1-4. We should be 3-2 like we are, Paul. Thank you. That's all I have. Have a good one.
Yeah, I'm one that I still thought there were so many other plays in that game. Lane Kiffin got extremely conservative when he got the ball back and then gave it right back to Auburn. Should they have had a score? I mean, I don't know. I am not an official, never want to be one, never really – want to know anything more about it than I have to, but it just seems like, they said it was reviewed, but it certainly wasn't reviewed very long. But I've learned that once a game is over, it really doesn't make any difference. Auburn won the game. Let's talk to Dominique in Florida. Hey, Dominique, go right ahead.
How you doing, Paul? I got a couple of quick questions. With Waddle's injury, I know it's going to change our offense tremendously. Because at the end of the day, he's a game changer. That's got to be accounted for. I think Bolden's going to do an excellent job, but I just don't think he would give us what Waters would give us. And with that coming up, if we get a chance to play Georgia, do you think that will favor Georgia much more in this matchup against us not having?
Yeah,
Waters?
You know, I don't know. I have no idea, Dominic. I mean, I think you have to just play the games out and. And in this season of all seasons, not get too hung up on what's 2 months away. To me, Waddle will affect them in the biggest and the toughest games. Is that LSU? Is that Georgia? Is that Clemson or Ohio State? I don't think he'll make much. You know, he'll be hurt. You'll be hurt without him. But I mean, he was a difference maker on the biggest stage, and you know, that's at the wide receiver position. Alabama has plenty of depth. They don't have him though. He's as good as anybody in the country. So there's very little you can do about that. Eddie is up next in Florida. Eddie, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul, how you doing, man? Hope you had a good weekend, real damn tight. Yeah, a great call by the last caller, Paul. I was thinking the same thing. I think we'll be good the regular season, rest of the season, but I don't know how it's going to fare for us in the playoffs. I mean, that's a tough loss. But, hey, man, I just wish the dude the best of luck, man, and man, that was hard. But to Paul, to Tennessee, this is just me, Tennessee talked a lot of smack. Yeah, they went on a winning streak, but they hadn't played anybody. And they always talked about how close they played us last year, but nobody ever talked about that Tua got hurt in that game. And to Kentucky, Paul, you had a lot of Kentucky fans calling last week. You know, you had one guy went over the whole schedule with you online in reference to how many games they thought they would win. So Kentucky fans, just chill out until you guys can put together two wins in a row, because Bama's not worried about Kentucky, Paul. Hey, Paul, hope you have a great week. Roll damn tide.
Thank you very much. Yeah, a lot of people were definitely talking some smack last week about Kentucky. That was a bad loss. I mean, you know, you come back with a big win, and then you literally throw it all away. That one will sting. We haven't talked about South Carolina's beat down by LSU. That's the problem with some of these programs. It's week to week, and if you can't sustain it, then it does you very, very little good. We're up against a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Welcome you back. Great to have you here. And Chip is up next in Nashville. Hey, Chip, go right ahead.
Thanks, Paul. Just wanted to say I was really disappointed in the way the officials made the call at the Ole Miss game. A big Ole Miss fan. I thought they should have looked at it longer. Just don't really understand what's going on with those guys this year. You know, Arkansas game, they mess up. Here they mess up in our game. And I just want to know, is there something we can do? I'm sure you don't know the answer, but I just seem
no,
like
no, I really don't. The one thing I thought we would get from the SEC officials was more transparency, but I haven't heard anything.
Exactly.
I mean, they have a PR.
We'd be like Arkansas and get a letter from the SEC saying they screwed up. And, I mean, you know, what good's that going to do us? But I just would really, really see if they could kind of do something a little bit more, a little bit in depth. And it just seems like things ought to get better.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I can't comment on the officials because I don't know what they're seeing. I know what Lane Kiffin said. All I know is I was watching the game, and the two commentators from the SEC network were openly blasting the officials. And you would think that there would have been some communication with the booth and explain what was going on, because I'm no different than you are. I'm a viewer. I have no idea what they know. And I mean, those guys made it. Tom Hart made it sound like it was highway robbery, didn't he?
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, it was. It at least cost us a tie. I'm not saying we could have won the game.
I agree with you on that.
But we wouldn't have lost the game like that.
Well, I mean, you know one thing. That game is on at the SEC office, so all they have to do is communicate to the network. What's going on?
Right.
That's all I want, and that's all anyone wants is just explain to us what this is about. Not
exactly, sir. Exactly right. All right. Thanks for letting me be, Paul.
Thank
Great
you.
Show. Thank you.
Agree with you. I think a lot of people agree with you. Let's go to Scott in South Carolina. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Paul. I'm first time caller. Love your show.
Thank you very much.
I want to talk about Get In Before Cat Daddy. I'm a Gamecock alum and fan, and I think we've been talking about Will Muschamp too long. It's not Will Muschamp. It's Ray Tanner. Ray Tanner's been there since 2012 from Eric Hyman. He's not only made the baseball team a debacle, we hadn't been to the World Series since 2012. The basketball program has only been in the NCAA tournament one out of 8 years of Frank Martin. He can't recruit because of his temperament. If he could get the South Carolina kids, he'd be in the top 10 every year. I mean, Ja Morant's just one of many. And the coach, Don Staley, that was hired by Eric Herman. So he has nothing. He made the hiring of Will Muschamp to the disgruntled Gamecock fans, and it's time for him to go. I want him gone and a new AD to make the selection. What do you think, Paul?
I really haven't thought about it in that light. Ray Tanner, as an athletic director, all I know is he's respected by his peers, but ultimately the Muschamp hire is his. And
yeah, but how about all the men's sports? Every one of them, all we have is women's basketball. Every one of them. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call. I thought the loss Saturday, that's Muschamp's problem. He gets a big win, and then he throws it all away. And, you know, he had a huge win over Auburn, and he let go of it. I'm not saying they were supposed to win that game, but, I mean, they weren't supposed to just get obliterated either. And it was a game that a lot of people thought South Carolina could possibly win. So that's why I think it hurts even more. John is in St. Louis, and you are on the air. Hello, John.
Hey, Paul. It's good talking to you today. How are you, sir?
I am well. Thank you very much, John.
Good, good. Anyway, I just wanted to give the AD at University of Missouri some real credit here. I think, you know, the overall athletics programs had some real challenges the last almost decade on hiring good coaches, including you know, football and basketball especially. And, you know, it seems like Jim Sterk has really done a great job and his hire of Coach Drink. You know, I think the game Saturday is a really good sign of his ability to adapt to the strengths of another team. Kentucky came in here and, you know, they're a really strong defensive team, great defensive backs and solid line. And, you know, he stepped up and got his team ready and, you know, played some smash mouth with Kentucky and won that game. I mean, that was kind of big boy football the Tigers played Saturday. And I was impressed. So I wanted to kind of knock off here and get your opinion of how you think he's doing and how the Tiger football team is.
John, I watched the game too, and I was just thrilled for Coach Drink in that program. And you're right, Jim Sterk made a pretty daring hire in Eli. He was good. He was well known, but he certainly was not quite at the level of the SEC at Appalachian State. So he made a fantastic move, and that was a big win. You know, Kentucky was riding high. They were considered a legitimate threat maybe to the upper echelon, and that was a really punishing win. Steve is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Steve.
Back on what the Missouri fan said, I mean, usually we're the ones pushing people around. Coach Drink had his team ready to play. Our coach didn't have our team ready to play. We need to find a quarterback that can actually throw the ball to the receiver, not 10 yards over his head or 5 yards underneath him. Because what killed us wasn't that we couldn't run the ball. We ran the football successfully. What killed us is we couldn't throw the ball. They had a much better quarterback than we did, and I think everybody agrees with that. You know, hats off to Coach Drink. He did a hell of a job getting his team ready to play. But at some point, if we don't find a solution for Terry Wilson, and you can say, well, he's 14-5 as a starter. Yeah, he was handing the ball to Benny Snell, and Benny Snell was 14-5 as a starter, and then we played a wide receiver at quarterback. But the wide receiver we played at quarterback was a better thrower than Terry Wilson. You know, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus.
No, you're making a pretty – I mean, this team is way too inconsistent. And, you know, that was the most disappointing loss of the day, I thought, because, I mean, you expected Jeremy Pruitt's team to get beaten. You thought Muschamp was on borrowed time, but Mark Stoops looked like he was ready to go in there. And those are the games you have to win if you're going to advance. And that's a problem with Kentucky. They just can't continue. They can't keep the momentum going. Anyway, thanks for the call. Great to have you on. We are heading to Knoxville, where Jeremy Pruitt made some comments after the game that left many in the Vol Navy shaking their heads. We'll talk to the man who covers the team for the Knoxville News Sentinel, Blake Topmeyer. He is up next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A little bit later to John Talty of AL.com on what happens next for Alabama now that their most explosive player is gone. They should unfortunately be used to that. It happened last year in the aftermath of the Tennessee game, although they did get Tua back. They lost him again a few weeks later. The issue isn't a quarterback, but it is with the intangibles. Jeremy Pruitt, earlier today, or was this Saturday? I'm trying to remember which one it was. This is Jeremy Pruitt. Saturday, after Alabama just rolled over his Tennessee Vols.
I was on the other sideline 3 years ago. You think I didn't see that? All right. And I can assure you that the gap is closing. It might not show on the scoreboard today, but the gap is closing. I can assure you that. And that's one thing that's frustrating to me. And it's frustrating to our players, okay, is there's times that we've done some really good things, but as a team, whether it's, you know, offense playing really good and the defense playing really good and special teams, we've not put any of that together. And that's what the elite teams in our program and in our conference, that's what they do.
Putting the sell on the Tennessee fans that the gap between Alabama and Tennessee has certainly closed. You could have fooled the scoreboard. Blake Topmeyer joining us now, covers the Vols. Blake, always good to have you on. Good afternoon. And tell us what the reaction has been on Rocky Top after the game and obviously Pruitt's comments.
Well, Paul, most Tennessee fans aren't buying what Jeremy Pruitt is selling. In fact, I reached out to more than 140 Vols fans after those comments and asked them for their take. And more than 90% of the fans that responded to me said either A, he might be right, but it was still dumb to say after a 31-point loss, or B, they didn't know what he was seeing, that the gap clearly isn't closing. You know, you look back to Butch Jones's final season and Tennessee lost by 38 points against Alabama. Here in Jeremy Pruitt's third season, Tennessee has just lost by 31 points to Alabama. So I guess technically the gap closed by 7 points, and that's not much.
Yeah, and Blake, I'm struggling to come up with much to say in Jeremy's defense, because we've all seen the comparisons to Butch Jones and even Derek Dooley at this point. And other than that winning streak, which got him a contract extension and ultimately a raise, what does he have to show for his tenure at the University of Tennessee?
It's hard to point to signs of progress. I mean, certainly you can look back at the end of last season, and that was the one period of success there for Tennessee. But, you know, I mean, even when you look at the makeup of this roster, Paul, it's still a large chunk of the players that are playing meaningful snaps right now are Butch Jones leftovers. And that's not entirely unheard of in a coach's third season. I mean, you look at what Kirby Smart did in year three at Georgia. There were a lot of Mark Richt leftovers playing on defense, especially Dan Mullen there at Florida is still playing a lot of leftovers in his third season. But still, I think it would be a little bit easier to point to progress if you can look out on the field and say, you know, boy, this is a team full of freshmen and sophomores, you know, Pruitt's recruits. There's a lot of promise there. And I do think he has some exciting freshmen in this 2020 class that he signed, but a lot of those guys aren't getting on the field. And Pruitt talked about that a little bit after the Alabama game, saying he needed to see more out of those guys from practice. But still, I think, you know, if the losses are to pile up, it's a little bit easier to sell progress, I think, if you're playing a lot of your own recruits versus playing, you know, juniors and seniors that were left over by your predecessor.
I mean, I won't ask you why he made the statement, because I think we all know he was on the Alabama sideline, but it just came across rather hollow to me trying to sell fans who, by the way, have believed in him. I mean, this isn't a fan base that is still trying to make up its mind. They went all in at the end of last year. They couldn't wait to have Jeremy Pruitt lead that team to the first home game. So I'm just trying to square all this right now, Blake. And I know I'm asking you a lot here, but, you know, as you turn the corner toward the rest of the season, it's a long way from being over. I mean, there's some pretty pretty major test ahead.
Yeah, I was actually pretty interested why he made that comment, and so I asked him about it. He made the comment that he thought that the gap was closing, and I asked him a follow-up question in the press conference after Saturday's game of, why do you think the gap is closing? Like, what is it that you're seeing that makes you think the gap is closing? Because I was genuinely curious, you know, after a 31-point loss, what is he seeing exactly that makes him think that the gap is closing? And that's when he said, you know, I've been on that sideline, I've been on this sideline, I know the people on both sidelines, and I've got a good idea about football, and I know that the gap's closing, basically. Kind of, it sort of boiled down to football people can see that the gap is closing. And that, I mean, maybe that's true. I do think that there's more talent in this program right now than there probably was in 2017 and 2018. I think he has raised the talent level, but still, that then begs the question of, if the talent level is creeping up and you know, he made improvements there, then okay, but you're still 31 points away on the scoreboard. So, you know, any way you cut it, it's not really a good analysis of the situation. But you know, to your point about the back half of the schedule, I mean, I don't think all is lost. I think this is still a team that has the talent to rally here a little bit. But it's going to be interesting to see whether they have the resilience that last year's unit showed.
And I want to talk about the rest of the year, and we'll get the schedule thrown up there in a minute for those watching on television. But you know, we all know Florida is at the end, and if you're a Tennessee fan, you measure yourself against the Alabamas, Georgias, and Floridas of the world. But this schedule is even more complicated because, you know, in most years, Tennessee has an easy layup walking home. It used to be after Alabama, there'd be a non-conference game, Bandy in Kentucky, and there were eons when Tennessee did not lose. So here is the schedule: at Arkansas, A&M at home, at Auburn, Vandy in Florida. I mean, you can you know, after Vanderbilt, which is an automatic win for everyone this year, You got a lot to chew on there.
No doubt. I mean, yeah, there's just the one probably layup against Vanderbilt. But I guess on the other side of the coin, you don't have Georgia and Alabama lurking on the back half of that schedule. So I don't know that I chalk up any sure losses, although I think hanging with Florida's offense is going to be awfully tough. But, you know, I think these next 2 weeks are huge. This is a team on a three-game losing streak now, going into its bye week, and coming out of that, it's playing an Arkansas team that, you know, has exceeded everybody's expectations this year. But not only is it big, you know, just as an opportunity to bounce back, but you, when you look at the narratives of, you have a third-year coach in Jeremy Pruitt who's riding this three-game losing streak, and then you have a first-year coach in Sam Pittman who's exceeding expectations in Arkansas. It certainly would not be a good look for Tennessee to come out of this bye week and lose a four straight game at the hands of a first-year coach. So, you know, I think they can jumpstart this season. I think this is a team with talent. Obviously, they have, you know, have to get better play out of the quarterback position. They have to find some answers on defense. I think they have to find some leadership that, you know, they got in their senior class last year and now has been lacking after that turnover this year. So there's a lot of question marks, but I do think there is enough talent there to, you know, to win, let's say, three out of these last five games.
Yeah, Blake, I don't want to sound like that grumpy guy sitting at the end of the bar, you know, watching the TV right now on the Strip in Knoxville and go, really? What have you seen lately that would make you think they can win any of those games other than Vanderbilt? I realize that that's an extreme, but to me, that would be a pretty tall order based on what we've seen the last couple of weeks.
Well, based on what we've seen the last couple of weeks, no doubt. I mean, the Kentucky game was a true disaster. Four turnovers, two pick sixes. I mean, if it could go wrong, it did go wrong in that game. Otherwise, you know, I would say the season has sort of kind of carried out as most people would kind of expect, I think. You know, I mean, I thought they started the season playing well. They were playing pretty mistake-free football in 2 weeks. They hung with Georgia for a half and then imploded in the second half. And the wheels have fallen off since then. But, you know, I don't think, you know, the first 2.5 games of the season, Tennessee played pretty well. The last 2.5 games, they've played pretty poorly. They're not going to face Alabama or Georgia in the back half of the season. And I think they do have a ton of question marks. But, you know, I guess I just don't believe, you know, this is an offensive line we talked about coming into the season, maybe being one of the best in the SEC. This is a defense that returned 8 starters off last year's unit that fueled that strong finish at the end of last season. This is a veteran offense. Like, I feel like the pieces are there. I mean, the same reason why we thought, you know, Tennessee was a fringe top 25 team coming into the season, I think still exists. But they do have to find a lot of answers. They have to cut down on mistakes. They got to get a better play out of the quarterback position. And I think the biggest thing, Paul, is that defense is a little bit of a mess right now, and that's Jeremy Pruitt's forte. You know, he fired his defensive line coach and took over the unit himself. Well, they didn't look any better on Saturday against Alabama. In fact, the defense had 17 missed tackles in that game, Paul. Alabama had almost 300 yards after contact. And, you know, that's where Jeremy Pruitt needs to kind of earn his living, and Tennessee's not living up to it.
Well, the good news, Blake, and I think it's the only good news, is that Pruitt didn't fire anybody at halftime. So the staff dodged a bullet, wouldn't you say?
He doesn't have to coach any more positions. He just has to be the head coach and the defensive line coach, and that's it. No more positions to coach.
Give that man a raise. Blake, thank you. Oh, you. I meant you, not Pruitt. Pruitt's already got one. Blake, thank you very much. Always great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Paul.
You got it. Blake Todmeyer, outstanding beat reporter for the Knoxville News Sentinel. He covers him as well as anyone in the country. And we will take a break. More to come. John Talty a little bit later on the injury to Waddle and what it could mean to the Tide's national championship hopes. Back with more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Mike is up next in Houston. Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Paul. I got to tell you, you are a master at your craft. And
you.
No better example of that than your interview last week with Hugh Freeze. So much so that it piqued my interest enough to watch the Liberty Southern Miss game. And one of the things that, you know, I really appreciated in watching that game was the fact that you got a guy who made news a few years ago simply because he coached from the press box in a hospital bed. And then to have his team now at 6-0 and to watch him compete in that game, I mean, after halftime, they took one on the chin and their lead was more than cut in half, but yet they persevered, competed the rest of the game, and won convincingly. And it was a little bit like watching the same type of intensity and focus that you see out of players from Alabama. And I'd have to say that after your interview, another caller called in and said, you know, if Bama, upon Saban's retirement, can't get Dabo, Hugh Freeze should be the next call made. And I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah, I think Hugh, I've always thought Hugh was a good coach, but I think this year may be some of his best coaching. I mean, he's now beaten two programs way above his classification, maybe not in absolute, but in theory. And, you know, I don't think he'll be there long. And exactly where he goes next, I'm not sure. Yeah, you know, Alabama may be a little too high on the hill for him, but I do think he will get a really good job, and I think he deserves one. And you know, we don't need to debate that at, you know, ad nauseum. But you know, he's already, you know, he's moved on from that, and that's all you can do.
Yeah, and I think his performance as a head coach is a testament to him moving on.
Exactly,
he's clearly not distracted. He's focused. He's getting his players prepared as well as anybody.
I have to agree with you on that. I'm really glad to see it. He's a guy that is truly a smart, upper echelon, elite offensive coach, and now he's proving it again as a head coach. We are 1 hour down. We spent a lot of time talking about the situation in Knoxville. officiating. In the next hour, we'll look at Alabama after Waddle. Is it that big a deal? Could it cost him a title? All of that, plus your phone calls as we come back.